May has been observed as Mental Health Awareness Month since 1949. Some might say that awareness is needed more now than ever.
Don't you think it's time?
Recent high-profile suicides have brought attention to the issue of mental health and shown us all that it is an issue that can affect everyone from denizens of Skid Row to the wealthy and famous. We take a look at the issue of mental health and what's being done to help those who are struggling. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and we want to start off with a bit of a warning. We're going to be discussing some touchy subjects. One of those is suicide. We know for some of you this can be a painful and a triggering subject. So let's get started. Dr. Anil Sharma is a psychiatrist and vice president of the psychiatry department at Dignity Health Northridge. And first of all, thanks for joining us. Appreciate that.
Thanks for inviting me on your show.
You know, first of all, I think that many of us believe that we have never seen such a time that spotlighted the fragility of our mental health. That said, do you think we're in a particular crisis right now? And if so, why?
So I think, as we all know, mental health has been neglected for years or decades. And number of patients with mental illness and even suicide has been increasing. Especially pandemic created this problem or made this problem even worse. Like pre-pandemic, usually about 1 in 10 people complained about any mental health issue, anxiety, stress, and post-pandemic numbers are as high as 3 or 4 in 10 based on the surveys. Although we need more in-depth studies to find out what exactly prevalence of mental illness now post-pandemic, but some surveys suggest that it's going up to the point like 3 to 4 person out of every 10 people.
Singer Naomi Judd tragically died by suicide not long ago. Her family made this pronouncement we've never really heard before, and that was her death was due to mental illness. She actually said died from the disease of mental illness, the daughters. What do you make of that statement? And I want to talk a little more about that.
So just to let you know, I've never treated her or never involved in her case. So I'm just going to talk about in general. So when we talk about mental illness, I think because of a stigma, people are trying not to say that somebody committed suicide, and they are saying that, you know, they were dead because the underlying cause was mental illness.
Well,
you know, that's my understanding.
And I think my thought here is, as we're talking about this, we talk about, we've changed our language. Our lexicon continually changes. So it went from taking one's life to killing themselves to died by suicide. Now I'm wondering if maybe we're turning the corner a little bit and should be talking about dying from the disease of mental illness. And if that would appropriately put the spotlight on the cause that made somebody do what they did.
And I think that's the right way to go. And I think it's because of stigma mental illness had over the years or decades. And now we are trying to destigmatize and trying to focus on the illnesses itself, that mental illness is treatable. You know, if suicide happened, you know, it had an underlying cause, mental illness. And let's focus, let's try to treat underlying mental illness, which is the main cause.
Do we think that the pandemic just made things so much more worse, that that's why we're hearing a lot of this? I mean, obviously, people dying by suicide, that's been going on for a long time. It's nothing new. But people finding themselves in time of despair, has that increased? I know you pointed out some numbers earlier. And maybe now that we're starting to get back out in the sunshine a little bit, do you think maybe that will turn a corner as well?
So it's common sense. What happened in pandemic? People were living under a lot of worries, stress. We didn't know what to expect. Remember in 2019 when COVID-19 just struck us, we didn't know what to expect. Should we wear a mask, not wear a mask? There were no vaccines, there were no treatments. So we were living under a lot of worries, stress, and which got worse as time passed, because people were in isolation. People were not following up with their mental health or even their medical health. And as you know, healthy mind lives in a healthy body. But if you are not seeing your doctor for your diabetes, your blood pressure, your cancers, and all other medical issues, it took a toll on people's mental health in general.
I remember earlier in the pandemic, we had doctors on this program who said that they were amazed how people were not getting these regular checkups, mammograms and things like that. And one emergency room doctor told us that people were coming into his emergency room with stage four cancer because it had already progressed so far. It was at that stage.
It's true. In fact, I lost my uncle that way. I was very close to him, and his cancer progressed during pandemic, and he didn't have all the resources to go see his doctors, get chemotherapy, etc. So it's personal. And I have seen that in a lot of my patients who were not seeing their psychiatrists, therapists, or even medical doctors, dentists, etc. So that took a toll. So it was multifold in unpredictability. You know, what's COVID? What's going to happen? We didn't know. We didn't know there was a treatment. We were not following up with doctors, living in isolation. And a lot of people turned to bottle. They started drinking heavier or using drugs more than often because isolation, being in withdrawn, had nothing to do. Loss of incomes, loss of relationships, all this, you know, multiplied during the pandemic.
And took people down another rabbit hole. All right, first of all, my condolences, and I'm so sorry to hear about your uncle, and I also thank you for being with us today. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you.
You know, for you who might be experiencing suicidal ideations or you know somebody who is thinking about suicide, we want to give you that phone number that's also important. It is the number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. We'll give it several times during this program. That number is 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, adults are not the only ones affected by the mental health crisis we've seen expanding in this country. Children are too, and it's getting worse. As we come back, we'll talk about what's causing the problem and what can be done. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. As awkward as the subject of mental health can be, it can be even more difficult to discuss the tragedy of mental illness in children. The well-being of 73 million American kids is under stress and seems to be getting worse, according to a recent government survey. It found that anxiety, depression, and behavioral problems appear to be on the rise, while the amount of time kids spent being physically active or getting preventative care has been on the decline. Our next guest is Dr. Laurel Baer. She's spent an entire career working within the school system, addressing the root causes of children's mental health problems. And Dr. Baer, thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've talked before, and when we've talked about some of these issues you deal with in the classroom. So first, before we get to understanding a little bit about what you've observed, just tell everybody what it is you do.
So I was the assistant superintendent for an LA County school district and really addressed the cause and root of mental health and how kids could maximize their academic performance, but more importantly, how do we address suicide, mental health, well-being, so that we are able to kind of unpack what these risk factors and stressors are that kids bring to school.
Have you seen an increase over these last couple of years of mental health related issues in the schools?
Absolutely. I would say beyond the last couple of years, I think the COVID story isn't just mental health, but certainly COVID supercharged the mental health needs of our kids. Our kids were isolated. We know that, you know, preteens and teens and children in general are very social. And there was a lot of loss, not just loss of life, but loss of friends, loss of relationships, loss of opportunities to communicate effectively, loss of that school environment where we nurture and we have the gatekeepers, and the burden doesn't just fall on one party, it's shared amongst a school community.
You know, this gets to an area that I think a lot about, which is unintended consequences. You know, you've got remote learning, which is a way to educate, but then what happens as a result of doing that?
Absolutely. You know, the isolation, what kids describe, the sense of hopelessness because there was a lot of insecurity. Nobody could predict what the outcome ultimately will be. And then our kids weren't able to share. They, you know, they're social beings. And we know that when we walk on campuses and campuses are buzzing in here, everybody was in a lockdown. And, you know, we visualize that a classroom has a learning atmosphere. It's a safe place to learn, to share and communicate. That's not necessarily the case for every child that comes to school. Their homes may not provide that safe, nurturing environment or a safe place to talk about what their stressors are, what their sense of hopelessness is. How do we instill that hopefulness amongst our kids when they're in isolation with all this uncertainty?
You know, I said at the beginning of the program, we're going to talk about some difficult and touchy issues. And the one I want to address right now is children and suicide. And, you know, is this increasing?
It is, unfortunately. And again, you know, we refer to COVID in the last 2 years, but this certainly has been a struggle for schools, for our youth, for our parents for many years. California was one of the first states to enact an assembly bill and then followed up by another bill so that every school official, whether you're a teacher or a principal or you're a campus supervisor, every school official is responsible when they identify kids that are in crises, when they identify kids that are struggling, what do they do next? We have the responsibility to care for all children, whether they're in the classroom, coming to school, going home from school. We need to make sure we've got as many gatekeepers as possible.
What's it going to take to fix this? I mean, oftentimes you can't fix a problem or help turn a problem around until you know what the implications are, what's occurred. You need the answer before you can get to the question, right? How do you fix this? How do you make this better?
I think we have to begin to look at how we're messaging mental health. You know, I know you've talked about how we focused on some prior deaths by suicide by talking about the mental health and the impact. If we can focus on messaging on mental health and normalize it like we do talk about heart attacks or cancer, we've got to be able to instill with our youth and with adults at large that we can talk about mental health. We all struggle. We have good days and bad days. It's when those bad days outnumber the good days that we really have to look at. How do we intervene? You know, what effective strategies do we have in schools? That's why we're integrating so much well-being, social emotional learning, all these different opportunities so kids learn how to share. They can identify a feeling and talk about that feeling rather than saying, you know what, tomorrow will be a better day. We need to be able to find a place where kids are able to talk about how they're feeling, need to know where to go for help, who they can rely on. You know, I always say every child is one adult away from being successful. We have to help our kids engage and build those resiliencies, build those protective factors, because we know, and that will reduce those cases that we are talking about with kids engaging in self-injurious behavior, engaging in death by suicide. We must talk about the importance of good mental health.
And we just have a few seconds left in this segment, but let's pick up where Dr. Schwarma left off before. Should we be calling this died from the disease of mental illness, as was the case with Naomi Judd? Should we be changing the way we talk about this? I don't know that we're going to change it on one television program, but somehow you got to start having a conversation somewhere.
Absolutely, 100%. If we can identify that as a disease, as we said about other diseases that we so openly talk about, then we're going to focus on how do we treat that disease? How do we intervene on that disease rather than focus on how was the act taking place? And so we really talk about when we educate educators and identifying risk factors on how to talk about suicide, how to talk about mental health, how to talk about making things better for kids.
Got to do that, right? Dr. Laurel Bear, thank you so much for joining us and good information there. All right, coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, depression, confusion, brain fog. Are these mental or physical symptoms? For some people, it's looking more and more like they may be side effects of COVID-19, and we'll talk about that next. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. We've all heard the term long COVID, but in many ways, it's a mystery that's yet to be solved. Evidence, though, continues to accumulate that many people who have been infected with COVID-19 have lingering symptoms, including neurological symptoms. Joining us right now to talk about that, Dr. Suman Radhakrishna, an infectious disease doctor with Dignity Health California Hospital. So good to see you again. Thanks for joining us, doctor.
Thank you, Hal, and thank you for having me on your show.
Of course. You know, first of all, we should define what long COVID is. I mean, we talk about it a lot, but let's not assume everybody knows what it is.
You know, when somebody is sick with an infection, it even though the antibiotics are done, the fever is gone, there are some lingering effects, and that is to be expected. So if somebody gets a cold, it takes them a couple of days to recover. If they have pneumonia, it takes them a couple of weeks to recover. And you can't just jump back to what you were doing and think that everything's going to be fine. Same way with COVID, even people who've had mild symptoms may say, well, you know, I know I'm feeling better, but I'm not back to where I was. If this lasts longer than 4 weeks, then we start looking to see if these are some of the, what we call as post-COVID or long COVID effects.
And so how does that affect our mental health?
You know, think about COVID. First of all, a lot of people died. Of course, the newer variants and what is running around right now is more likely to cause less symptomatic disease. But the minute somebody gets the diagnosis of COVID, the first thing that comes into their head is, oh my goodness, all those pictures, you know, there was a lot of information overload of people dying. And all those pictures coalesce. And the first thought that everybody has is that going to be me? The second thing that happens is now you are forced to quarantine. And so one negative thought, you know, starts germinating, that seed starts germinating in your brain, and all of a sudden you have a forest full of those negative thoughts. And you have to live with it for 10 days. And some of these lingering symptoms of cough, not being able to smell well, and fatigue, which seems to be the most common denominator that takes a little while for people to dig out of after they get recover from COVID, gets people to start thinking and having doubts about, you know, what's going to be, you know, what am I going to be able to do, especially if they were in a job which required a fair amount of physical activity. It's really worrisome. And then the economic hit to the pocketbook because you couldn't go to work and do things. Now, all of these add up. And of course, you know, even somebody who was mentally healthy to start with is going to have some problems. And think about individuals who had a tendency towards depression and negative thoughts or anxiety. Now, that gets multiplied by a factor of so much that it is difficult to handle.
So it triggers more suicidal ideations.
It does. It does. And a sense of hopelessness and helplessness. And that is the worst.
So what do you, how do you deal with that?
The good part is there are some things that we don't know, but some things we do know is most people recover. There are a few patients who continue on at 8 months and more after recovering from COVID, but most individuals by 3 to 6 months have gotten around it or gotten over it completely. When I say gotten around it, they have ways to surmount this. Brain fog, to a certain extent, what most of my patients have described it as, is like putting your parking brake on and trying to speed up. You can still do your things, but it just takes you a lot longer and you have to double check and triple check your work. And if you have checklists that help you, frequent periods of rest, then you can surmount it and lead a decent life until you get over these effects.
Let's just clarify something here for a second. Are we saying here that negative thoughts tend to perpetuate long COVID, or is it actually a physical thing that's occurring, triggering negative thoughts?
I The first thing that someone who's had symptoms for about 4 weeks needs to do is go see their doctor, make sure there's nothing that needs to be corrected. If you're having chest pains every time you walk, make sure it's not your heart, make sure your lungs are getting better. If it is diabetes, correct the diabetes and hypertension. And then if there is no obviously correctable condition, then you do need to start thinking about, positive reinforcement. There is cognitive rehabilitation that is available to these patients. And you should consider getting into one of these studies where they're looking to see what the effects are. And that way you can not only help yourself, but help someone else who is going through it.
But is long COVID physical? Is that something that's actually a physical thing, or is it something we're perpetuating by negative thoughts?
There is a physical component, and then there is the negative thoughts. So how much of it, how much of each thing is which is very hard to tell, and it's individual. And even in that particular individual, on some days there are really bad days and some days that are better days.
I want to ask you about the same thing I asked the other two doctors about, and that's the sort of way we talk about suicide. I know you're really more about infectious diseases, but you and I have talked before, and I think we can approach this. Do you think that when we talk about somebody who died by suicide, should we be saying that they died from the disease of mental illness?
I support that they died from the disease of mental illness. And the reason why I say that is whenever, let's assume I have two patients with pneumonia. One patient recovers and bounces back in the given time frame, and the other one takes a long time. And part of it, a big part of it is also the mental health and the attitude and everything else that was going on before they got pneumonia. Definitely, the recovery from any physical illness is dependent on mental health. And if mental health to start with was not was tenuous, then it is very hard to recover.
All right, very good. Dr. Suman Radhakrishnan, and I've said it so many times, it should roll right off my tongue. Thank you so much. Good to talk to you again. I appreciate the information. And I want to add once again, if you're experiencing suicidal thoughts, or you know someone who is, the number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK. And Fox 11 News and Death will continue right after this break. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News and Death. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.